Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever. But I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LeelaQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Yeah. Hey, folks, welcome to this special episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. As you may know, my podcast sidekick, Brock Armstrong, is out gallivanting around Europe somewhere. And I promised you that while he was gone, I was going to go out and bring you some of the best folks that I personally know, some of my mentors, some of the people who have taught me a lot of things that have really helped me to get to where I'm at in life and bring them on the podcast. And today I have one of those folks right here on the other line with me. Now, his name is Ty Lopez, and Ty is a really interesting guy. He's an aspiring Renaissance man, and I would say he actually is a Renaissance man. He went from being a college dropout living with the Amish, which he'll tell you more about, to working on Joel Saladin's farm, which he's also going to tell you about, to being a self-made millionaire before the age of 30. He's launched 12 multi-million dollar businesses. He's a member of Mensa, which is a high IQ society. He's a certified financial planner, financial consultant, chartered life underwriter. He's got a ton of books. I've been in his library. He literally has 5,000 plus books, and he's going to give us some excellent tips on books and how to enhance your ability to read books quickly and thoroughly. He's been on Bravo's Millionaire Matchmaker. His episode was the highest rated yet. He is a frequent traveler. He's been to 51 countries on 6 different continents, and he's a student of salsa dancing, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, classical piano. He lives up in the Hollywood Hills, where I happen to know that he has a little bit of a cold thermogenesis pool right off his front porch, and he is just a wealth of knowledge. You may have even seen an article that he wrote on BenGreenfieldFitness.com, which I'll link to in the show notes for this episode, called 50 Secrets of the World's Longest Living People. That was an excellent episode, but today we're going to go way above and beyond living long. And specifically, what we're going to delve into today is one of Ty's specialties, which is getting yourself to be tough and resilient. Now, before I let Ty take things away, just a quick note. If we talk about resources, if we talk about books, if we talk about anything that would be helpful for you, I will make this easy for you. Just go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Ty. That's T-A-I. BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Ty. And I will make sure I put references to everything that we talk about over in the show notes there. So, Ty, thanks for coming on the call, man.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be with the podcast master.
Well, I'm excited to have the toughness and resilience master on the call.
Oh, I don't know if I'm the master. You're probably the... Well, I've worked on it from the business standpoint, from the, you know, you're the Iron Man. I try to keep in shape. I love sports. I believe it or not, I was one of the top basketball players in high school in the U.S. I played at one of the biggest schools, and I'm interested in, you know, anything sports related and physical. And
yeah, and I come from a background. Your dad was a bodybuilder, right?
Yeah, my dad's one of the first bodybuilders in America. He was. It's a cool story. Talk about resiliency, Mike. And I'm not that close with my real dad. I didn't really know him too much growing up, but my mom got divorced when I was little. He's actually in prison when I was born, and so my mom took me away. But my dad had good side and a bad side. The good side of my dad is that he was supposed to be dead by 12 years old. That's what the prediction by doctors was when he was born. He had scarlet fever. He's born in 1934, and right after the 1929 stock market crash, and in Harlem, New York, kind of poor. And doctors said, look, his heart's not good. This guy's going to die at probably by 12. So keep him inside. I don't think I ever told you a story. It's a cool story. Wow. They said, keep him inside. Keep him away from the cold. And by 12 years old, my dad was a sickly kid. And he told me, finally, he just got sick of it and just started going outside. And he stumbled upon some magazines when he was 13 or 14 years old. I don't know if it was Jack LaLanne, but you're talking about in the 40s, okay? Mm-hmm. And he started picking up heavy weight and lifting. And literally everything went away. Every symptom, every issue. He became Mr. Junior USA. He had the world record bench press. He was like, you know, 160 pounds bench, like 450 or something. And that was a lot back then for steroids. He became Mr. Yeah. New York, Mr. Canada, Mr. Puerto Rico. So, you know, right there, you could see that the world has been full of BS about the value or the potential harm that comes from being tough. Like, yeah. There's a lot of solutions with being tough. I tell people, you know, I got 1.5 million people on my, I do the read a book a day and put, and a lot of it's about business. It's not only about business, but it's the same piece of advice. You know, if you want the good life, which to me is health, wealth, love, and happiness, it's pretty much the same formula in all four areas, whether it's your body or your bank account. People who make a lot of money, people who win Ironman have more in common than you would think.
You know,
a lot more.
I want to get into some of those characteristics with you in a second, but first I'm kind of interested in your story. I mean, your dad was a bodybuilder. And you eventually wound up at some point in your life going and living with the Amish and kind of getting your chops in terms of learning about life kind of in that scenario. But how did that all happen from you dropping out of college to getting out of the place where you're living with the Amish and eventually working on Joel Saladin's farm?
Well, so what happened is I was born in Southern California, born in Long Beach, Compton, kind of the ghetto when my dad was in prison. Like I said, my mom took me away, went back. I was raised kind of by my single mom and my grandma and grandpa. And then we ended up in North. I played basketball in North Carolina in high school. And I picked up this book. I was always interested. It's interesting. From a little kid, my grandma was an anthropologist at Yale. And so I kind of have like two sides. Like my dad was like from Harlem, you know, kind of street smart. And then my mom came from this side that's more academic. And my grandma was an anthropologist, loved Native Americans. So as a little kid, I started studying them, 4, 5, 6 years old. I loved reading books. I remember it's kind of like the Warren Buffett story. I was like in eighth grade or so, or I'm sorry, 8 years old. And I went to my public school library and they're like, we don't have any more books on Indians. You read them all, which ties into this toughing up. Because, you know, you've heard me talk about this cold shower story that I'm going to talk about. I got that from the Native Americans. I mean, the Native Americans, I was fascinated by. I've always been fascinated by greatness. And when it came physical specimens, I just finished, by the way, like I said, I read this book a day, and I just finished the book Geronimo, one of the newer biographies. Mm. They say the toughest people known to mankind probably ever to live with the Apache Indians. So anyone listening to this that wants to have an insane study on true grit and toughness, just read about the various Apache groups, whether it's Cochise, Geronimo, Victorio, all those great chiefs. I'll tell you this little crazy, I know we're diverging, but I got an ADD.
No, this is great stuff. This is great stuff.
So, you know, one of the things that from a little teeny kid, they would make you jog like 20 miles through the, you know, this is in Arizona, Northern Mexico, extremely hot, and you'd have to hold a mouthful of water. And when you got to the other side, you'd have to spit it all out in a bowl or else you weren't a man. So imagine running through the desert 10, 20 miles and then have to spit the water out. Another amazing story. The Apaches, you know how they used to, there was wild horses and they were more, they didn't really farm like the Navajo. So the Apaches just had, they needed horses and, but they didn't raise them. So you know what they would do? Guess what you would do to get a horse back, what they would do, what they developed.
I have no
they
idea.
They would run horses down till the horse gave up on foot.
Wow. Like the persistence hunters who used to run down antelopes before they invented spears.
That was happening not that long ago, 100 years ago. Wow. People were doing this persistence thing. So anyway, so I was a kid. I was fascinated by – my grandma was into the pottery of Native Americans. And I was a boy and rough and tumble and I high testosterone. And I was like – show me the fighting and Geronimo. And, you know, Geronimo at the very end, 12 men and about 20 women, the last band of Apache Indians, it took 15,000 soldiers to catch them. And the final death count per Apache Indian killed versus U.S. soldiers, 300-1. That's how tough they were. Wow. So I was fascinated. Then we moved to North Carolina, which is more rural, you know, and I was in California. I was just reading books, but I read this guy, Tom Brown. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's considered like the number one survivalist. He got in like Time magazine for going to live in the wilderness with just a knife and coming back a year later weighing 25 pounds more than when he started. So I was into this, and my mom and my stepdad got into it. We rented a little, I lived in a mobile home actually growing up, so I didn't have a lot of money. And we lived on this little farm, we rented it. And my stepdad wanted to make some extra money, and he got this book called Pastured Poultry Profits, how to make $25,000 on 10 acres of land in 6 months. And it was by Joel Salatin. So we took a trip up to Joel Salatin. I was in my senior year of high school. And while we were up there, I don't know if I impressed Joel Salatin or he thought I was crazy because I talked a lot, as you can tell now. And Joel called on the way we were leaving. Joel said, because we went up there for 2 days to butcher chickens. He has this little, this is before Joel was like the famous Joel in National Geographic and Smithsonian.
Yeah, I mean, he's all over the place now.
Yeah. Now he was in his, you know, this is the young Joel. And mm-hmm. so he said, I'm starting an apprenticeship. Do you want to be the first apprentice? So I was supposed to, you know, I graduated high school. I was going to go to college. And I'm like, should I go to college? And my stepdad's like, college can wait, man. Go to this Joel Salatin guy. So I wasn't even, didn't know anything about farming. I just literally, I remember, went up there, and there I was in the middle of Joel's a man's man. I will tell you that. I've known Joel for a long time. He was just at my house here in Hollywood. We've been close friends, and he's like a second father to me. And I was thrown into, dude, if you want to be tough, I'll tell you the simplest formula. Farm, man. And I did a talk once called A Nation is Born Stoic and Dies Epicurean. And the Stoics, if you read Greek philosophy, the Stoics were people who believed in foregoing present pleasure to get something bigger. They were the modern day investors. And Epicureans followed this guy Epicurus, who Epicetus, I think his name was, who basically said, you know, YOLO, live for now, live for today. And I consider that the consumers of the modern world. So if you're listening to this, I mean, the first path to set yourself apart in whatever you're doing, I wrote this 67 steps to greatness. I put this together recently because you see things online like 3 steps. I don't think it's 3. I have about 200, but I've narrowed it down to what I consider about 67. And one of them is you got to be an investor mentality, meaning stoic. You can't always be an Epicurean consumer. And if you look in the world, look at food. We're being hardwired and turned into consumers. You know, there's that old saying that I love. I did a TED talk and I talked about this. I said, this is an Amish guy, Amish store. I was living in Virginia, and this Amish guy, Sam Chup, he said, Ty, you know, my dad told me there's 3 kinds of people in the world. People who watch things happen, people who make things happen, and people who wonder what happened. And wondering is the state of the average consumer. And in another way they put it, that old saying, it says, if you're in a room and you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker. You never want to be the sucker. Look at the world now. When you walk into McDonald's, it's what's called a Pareto inefficiency. The economist Pareto talked about Pareto efficiency, which is a win-win, or Pareto inefficiency. And inefficiency is one party wins and the other one loses. When you walk into McDonald's, or I'm sure your audience doesn't like McDonald's, but the consumers at large, they're practicing Epicurean. They're being taken advantage of. They're the loser. They're not investors. Investors forego. So yeah. I got thrown into this Joel Salatin deal where it's like, this is like going back in time 100 years ago when the world, you know, 1900, yeah. The year 1900, Ben, this is a crazy stat. 90% of the world was rural and 10% was urban.
Hmm. Wow.
100 years later, the time we live in now, it's reversed. 90% of the world is urban, 10% is rural. Who do you think's tougher?
Yeah.
Rural people. That's why testosterone and sperm counts dropped in men anywhere from whatever stat you want to read, 25% to 50%. Guys like Joel Salatin, I was like, these are men's men. This is a man's.
Yeah, and they've actually done studies on that. I mean, you chop wood and carry water, two of the best ways to increase testosterone versus going to the gym. It's crazy. And my
I've done Joel my, does that. He has a wood burning stove.
Yeah. My father-in-law is a sheep rancher, and he's one of the hardest, toughest guys I know. My brother is a logger, and he logs in the middle of the winter, gets up at 4 a.m. and goes out in the frozen tundra. And if he shakes your hand, you know, away that he could crush you with one hand. It's nuts. But Joel Salatin, what'd you wind up doing with him? Like an internship or you just worked on his farm, like, or how to work?
Yeah, supposed to go for a summer for his – he started an apprentice. I was the first one. It was a three-month program. I ended up staying with him for 2.5 years. Started my first business with him. We became business partners. But even back then when I was, I think, 19 years old. And I really helped him. I mean, he helped me 100 times more than I helped him. But I was there at the beginning, and he's built this huge internship apprenticeship. But I was there. I mean, he had a 500-acre farm. We had about 10,000 chickens. I was in charge of 3,000. I used to wake up at I'm going to bounce around here, but because you're reminding me of different things, this is how my mind works. But Joel's an incredibly hard worker. The only people I've ever met similar to Joel is the Amish, because I met some Amish people when I was at Joel Salatin's, and after I spent 2.5 years with Joel, I was fascinated by the Amish, and I went and I wrote a letter to an Amish guy, Daniel Stolzfus, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He said, come on up. Usually the Amish don't let people in from the outside, but since I knew Joel and I knew a lot about farming, I kind of was halfway, had a foot in the door. So I took a bus up there to Lancaster. I'll never forget. I got out of this bus on Bird in Hand was the name of town. And you walk, it was a long walk down to the barn from where I got off the bus. So I'm in the modern world in a bus, and you walk down, and I walk in the barn, and there's two mules hitched to a wagon with an Amish guy with his sons there, and they're sitting there barefoot, and they were shoveling apple pomace, apple peelings to their cows. And I remember thinking, I just stepped back in time 200 years ago. And I spent another 2 or 3 years with the Amish. I was on a different community. And those people, it's fascinating, talking about tough. So among the Amish, there's one group of Amish people that's the most famous for being even the toughest of all the Amish. So I went and lived with them for a little while. And I went to Scottsville, Kentucky. It's actually a group of Mennonites. They're old order Mennonites. I get there and I stayed with this old bishop, and they went to bed at 6:45 at night. That was the first memory. First memory was I got there. They're like, they were like, do you want something to eat? And I was like, yeah. And they brought out cereal. They made their own cereal. They grew their own grains. They didn't really buy anything. They were a very self-sufficient group of Amish. And they brought out raw milk. And I remember going, I don't know. Are you allowed to drink this raw milk stuff? And the guy said, I have 14 children. They're all big, strong guys. You'll probably find they all grew up drinking milk. So I drank the milk, and then we went to bed at 6:45. And interesting, I will tell you, man, I've done everything in terms of sleep cycles. The healthiest I've ever felt was Kentucky, going to bed at 7 p.m. Because here's the crazy thing. When you go to bed with the natural circadian rhythms, your eyes pop up. I remember I heard a noise walking around that night, and it was like 3 a.m. I got up. I thought maybe I was late. It was 3 a.m. and I realized the wife got up to start putting the firewood in the fire to make breakfast. And so I went back to bed, and then I woke up, and it was like a whole town was awake. I felt like, oh my God, my first morning with these old order Mennonites that are famous for hard work, and I overslept. And the Amish are very polite, so they wouldn't wake you up, right? So I'm like, oh my God. So I jump out of bed. There was wagons going by, kids playing outside the window. It was like a nation was awake. And I ran and I got my phone. It was in my watch. And it was 4:15 in the morning. They were already out working.
Nowadays, you might see a paper boy, right, in a modern urban environment.
Well, and you'd see him drowsy. But that's the thing. If you go to bed early enough, you pop out of bed. I'm pretty sure that even the remotest feeling of drowsiness is your body trying to tell you you're doing something wrong with your sleep patterns.
Wow. Did you know, by the way, and this reminds me, that one of the guys who is considered to be one of the toughest Tour de France cyclists that ever was out there. I was raised in this devout Mennonite family in an Amish community.
Yep.
And it's Floyd Landis. And he used to actually, his parents used to give him so many chores that he had to sneak out at like 1 or 2 a.m. in the freezing cold to go ride his bike. And this guy wound up being like, he was known among the, they called him the mofo of the mountains in cycling because he was just so tough. But yeah, he grew up Amish in a strict Mennonite family.
They're tremendous. I mean, when I woke up there, it was 4:15 in the morning. First of all, when the Amish eat, they eat for like, you know, they eat breakfast, and then by 5 o'clock, by noon at that Amish community in Scottsville, you had almost worked 8 hours already.
Wow.
A lot of Amish wake up at 3 a.m. and they work. I mean, the greatest compliment the Amish, they speak a different language. I know their language. It's called Pennsylvania Dutch. It's German. The greatest compliment a man can ever give you is calling you a Schaffa. And Schaffa means a worker. Mm. And so it's interesting. The most interesting thing about the Amish relevant to this podcast is that the Amish, when you change the values of a society, people live up to it. So there, it's in reverse peer pressure. There's no teenagers wanting to be lazy because you're never going to marry a pretty girl because everyone's going to look down at you as a loser. Whereas in a modern society, people are like, you want to just be somebody who's chilling. I mean, the consumer, we've been so wrapped up and lied to about this consumer, and it's negative reinforcement. Whereas you could change the world if you could get enough people reversing what everyone values. The second you make the values, oh, kids who can run like the Apache Indians through the desert with water in their mouth and not spit it out. As soon as that is the hero instead of, you know, Justin Bieber, everything changes. People live up to societal expectations. So you need two things. You need, for the person to who's listening to this, you and I, we need to do change inwardly, but at the same time, you need enough momentum and as a society to change values to influence. Young people are massively influenced by, you know, there's 25 cognitive biases of the human brain. One of the most powerful for young people is anything social. So we're cued in. There's a good book by that Harvard professor, I think Daniel Lieberman, who it's called Social. And he talks about how our brain is finely attuned to any social cues. That's why I tell people, greatest thing you can ever do to toughen up is not try to do it with internal resilience because the mind is weak on that. They already done studies. Willpower is finite. Some people have more. If you change who you're around, and that will automatically rewire your brain to value different things. You'll value toughness then.
Start hanging out with people who have that kind of Amish characteristic of being a worker, what'd you call it, a Schaffa?
Schaffa.
Do you think that kind of in our day and age, from just like a social standpoint, because I mean, honestly, you know, I know that you live in Hollywood and you're not going to bed at 6:45 and getting up at 4 a.m. anymore, at least I don't think you are, but do you think that in our day and age there are things that we can still do, whether it is a technique from the Apache Indian tribe or whether it's a technique that the Amish use to help make us more resilient and more tough? And if so, are there some practical things that you're doing in your day-to-day life as far as like the way you live that you have kind of picked up from some of those cultures and some of those folks that you've studied?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it's like the 7 habits of highly successful people. If you do what's in your control, some things have become out of our control. If you got kids, you can't always be going this. But I'll give you an example of something you do on the sleep thing that I try to do. I'm not perfect at it, but when I do it, I feel amazing. Once a week, go to bed insanely early.
Mm.
Like once a week, just go to bed at 7.
It's so easy to do if you're out camping too. Like I actually just returned from a wilderness adventure race out in the middle of nowhere out by Hood River, Oregon. And once everything goes dark, it's so easy to just go to bed like that. It's a little bit harder when you're in your home. You know, I try and keep my home lights dimmed a little bit at night to make that easier. That's a really interesting technique. You mean like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, just like when it starts to get dark, you go to bed?
Yeah, like on Fridays sometimes. It's funny. It's like a lot of people go out. I just I'm like, you know, it's kind of the end of the week. I'm just like, you know what? I make Fridays my night when I just go to bed early. And people are worried, oh, it's going to throw off your rhythm. We're so messed up as a society. Like our bodies, most of ours are so messed up. Let that be the error. Let your body be an error of a little bit too much sleep, you know, one day a week. I think you can do it. If you can't do it one day a week, you know, one of my business partners, I used to work at GE Capital. I spun off an investment company and one of my business partners, he's one of the smartest guys when it comes to money, retired at 30 years old, under 30. And he told me, you know, focus on the 5% tweak. People always think when you talk about these things that life is this massive one-time change. Whereas if you listen to like Warren Buffett, the great investor who was mentored by some of the smartest people on the planet, it can be a succession of little wins. In fact, there's a good interview on YouTube with Warren Buffett and Jay-Z, actually. And he's like, and they ask Warren Buffett, what did your mentor, Benjamin Graham, one of the founders of stock market investing as we know it, teach you? And he said, well, you know, he told me what you want to do is never make any big mistakes and then get a lot of first base hits. If you get enough of little hits first base, the next thing you know, you're scoring a lot of goals. So when it comes to toughness, you apply those same principles that, you know, I teach in making money, or I do in my, you know, as an investor in my business, do the same thing for your body. Focus on a little win. Once a month, go to bed at 7. You start there and you proceed with this. Once you can do it once a month, and I think you got to have a longer end game. You know, I really see, like, I've talked about this, you know, 4-hour work week kind of mentality when it comes to business, or the 4-hour body, is that I just don't buy it, man. I don't want to be known as the anti 4-hour week, because I think Tim Ferriss is an amazing guy with a lot of amazing intentions. But unfortunately, I'm like, bro, we don't live in a world where we need the concept that there's 4-hour body. We need Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, somebody might say, Ty, you sound contradictory. You're saying that you should start in little increments. And I am. But the end game should be where you're going to bed at 7 o'clock, you know, 3 times a week. So you set Peter Drucker, the greatest of all business gurus of our time. He invented the modern MBA program, in a great book, Managing Oneself. I recommend everyone read that. It's a very small book. It's 50 pages or so, and it's applicable to anything, whether it be becoming the next Iron Man or making $1 billion. And he says, build 18 month time frames. So with the sleeping thing, for example, be like the first month in out of the 18 months of change, one night I'm going to go to bed at 7 or 8 or whatever it is. And then you just proceed with the series. And then by 18 months in, it's amazing. That's why I said the danger of the 4-hour body. It's a good start. But when the end game is I'm going to live a life where I just got to work out 4 hours, you know, I always say my dad he rewired his brain, which, let me bring up this Arnold Schwarzenegger thing, because I think it's an insane thing. I recommend to every single person on here, you asked the little habits. I was talking about going to bed earlier. You must read more. You must download the external knowledge of the greatest people in the world. We live in a world full of myths that you learn inwardly. You really don't. Study great people with impact and change upon the world. Each of them learned outwardly. That's why I talk about being a Renaissance man. Whether I was just reading Jean-Jacques Rousseau or Karl Marx or Darwin or Tesla, they were all learning from outside. So one of the things I read a book today, and I was reading this Arnold Schwarzenegger book. It's called Total Recall. It's the best one I've ever read about Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's a fascinating thing that happened to Arnold Schwarzenegger, because as in terms of a man who lived out his dreams, I'm not sure anybody has ever done it better. You know, as a little kid, he wanted to be strongest man, or, you know, most fit guy in the world, and he won 7-time Mr. Universe. Then he wanted to be a millionaire before 30. People don't realize he came here to Santa Monica, California, was a self-made millionaire before acting. He learned how, he made a mail order weight business and learned to buy and sell real estate. Wow. Then he went on and said, I want to be the most famous actor. He became the most famous actor. Then he wanted to be the highest paid actor. Then Terminator 2, he got paid $29.5 million and like 38 cents. I saw the contract. It's funny. I'm like, why did they negotiate the 38 cents? I don't know. But then he said, you know, when he was a little kid, he said, I want to marry a Kennedy. When he was a teenager, he married a Kennedy. I want to be as high as I can politically in America. He did. What was his formula? I'm going to tell you what his formula is. So it'll blow your mind. 5 years old, his father, who he had an interesting relationship, some good, some bad, but the great thing about his father said, before you can eat breakfast, son, you got to do 5 push-ups for me. don't know if you saw that recent Budweiser commercial where Arnold's playing ping pong with a guy and he says, do five pushups. That's from his childhood, because think of what his dad was doing, rewiring the reward system in Arnold's brain to go, pain equals breakfast.
Yep.
You see, if you can do those things on a small level, you can slowly but surely get tough. It's great if it happens at five, but most of us it has. So the four-hour work body idea is great for the first couple weeks, but you want to get to like Arnold Schwarzenegger where it becomes a lifestyle, where he's like, you know, man, the burn feels like an orgasm. You know, it was like working out 6 hours a day. I saw that in my dad. I remember my dad at 60 years old. We one time came home from Disneyland or something at 2 a.m. and my dad's like, I got to do triceps. I was reading about Rowdy Piper. I don't know if you know who he is. The Rowdy Piper, the Iron Sheik, you know, the Hulk Hogan back in that day. And they said, Iron Sheik, they'd find it would be 4 a.m. They'd all be wasted from out clubbing. They were like 20 years old, and he would be in the corner doing squats, sweating. And they were like, he spoke in the third person. And they'd be like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "The Sheik has to be tough, you know." But he was rewiring the brain slowly but surely. And if you got an 18-month time frame, incredible amount. I'm reading this Michael Jordan book, man. I've read all the Michael Jordan books. Read Michael Jordan: The Life, that biography. Same thing.
Incredible amounts of resilience. Sent out that book, I believe, in this morning's Book of the Day Club. And and by the way, for those of you listening in, I'll put a link to Ty's Book of the Day Club in the show notes for that Michael Jordan book. By the way, what was the name of the Peter Drucker book?
Managing Oneself.
Managing Oneself. Hey, folks, before we keep going with Ty, I want to tell you about this brand new razor I've been using to shave with. This is a high-quality razor blade that's engineered in a factory in Germany for extreme sharpness and strength. But despite it being manufactured in Germany, it's not super-duper expensive. The blades are about half the price of competitors, and you can order it all online. So this shaving system is made by a company called Harry's. If you go to harrys.com and use the promo code BEN, you save $5 off your first purchase. And it's got totally guilt-free, natural ingredients in the shaving gel that the blade comes with. You can even customize the blade with your own name if you'd like to. And it's a really good shaving experience, a great shaving experience, but it's a fraction of the price of any of the competitors out there who are producing fancy blades. This one is actually nice and affordable. So check it out. It's at harrys.com, and you can use code BEN to get $5 off. Order it now, just one time. Check it out and let me know what you think. All right, let's get back to Ty. It's a very interesting observation that you make about doing these little things every day, and then having that eventually become a part of your life, because I see this over and over again in some of the toughest people that I know. So, for example, you know, Joe DeSena, the CEO of Spartan, he does 300 burpees every morning, and that's just his thing. Another guy, actually, a guy who I was just out at this adventure race with, I was talking to his neighbor who was also out there, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'll get home from work, I'll be exhausted, I'll be, you know, laying on the couch at 9 p.m., and I'll see this guy out in his driveway getting geared up in like a weighted vest and his Camelback and hydration system to go out for a 10-mile run after work. And it's just these people, they go out of their way to do the hard things. And I think that
but if you're listening to this and you're intimidated by that because you're just starting out, what I say is what Joel Salatin told me: make haste slowly, Ty. Or the greatest of all basketball coaches, John Wooden, he says, be quick but not in a hurry. So make a change today, but not in a hurry. You're not going to get, you will hurt yourself if you try to become Geronimo tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
But if you set long goals, you'll be all right. Stop being so, people are, their sense of time, you know, if you read Stephen Hawking, the great physicist, time is an elusive, very hard thing to understand. Make time your friend by saying, you know what? I'm going to be quick, meaning I'm going to jump on it, but I'm also going to know I probably got some time in life. If everybody, you know, most people, I think something like 70% of people who get a gym membership never show up more than once or twice. I know why. It's because they had an inaccurate time frame. They had their timeline was messed up. Look, when it comes to success, I've studied successful people for many, many years. I've been in 51 countries. I've read 3,000 or 4,000 books. I've studied, you know, I've had 5 mentors, Joel Salatin, Alan Nation, a couple billionaire guys. Now I'm lucky enough, I'm an investor. I go around the world, find the best person in any industry. I've got 12 business partners, anywhere from guys making, one of my best friends making $1 million a day, guys making billions. And one thing that I see there is that they understand the right timeline. So Warren Buffett started at 7, realizing he wanted to invest in the stock market. He wasn't a billionaire until he was 57. And when it comes to body, the equivalent to me of a billionaire in, you know, in terms of the body is somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger or somebody who's an Iron Man. This thing is done over tremendous long periods of time. Yeah, so you got to be realistic here.
I agree. It's something that I recently mentioned, in an article series I was writing on fat oxidation. It takes about 1.5 to 2 years and minimum of 6 months before you even start to see changes when you begin to do something like restrict carbohydrates and expect your body to be able to oxidize fats at a fast enough rate to generate ATP quickly enough for you to be able to exercise hard on a lower carbohydrate intake. And people, I get emails from people and phone calls from people, they go low carb for whatever, 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and then they're like, I don't have any energy. This is all about patience. And I think it's a great point that getting tough is about patience.
Absolutely.
I've got for you too.
Okay, go ahead.
Kind of related to the process of getting tough and patience, and another thing that I know you do, and that's this concept of temperature fluctuations and cold. I know you're a fellow kind of cold thermogenesis enthusiast. How do you use that, and where did you first discover that?
Well, like I said, I was I remember reading, I was probably 10, 12 years old. I'm reading one of these books on the Sioux Indians, the Plains Indians. And I read this story where a missionary met in middle South Dakota or North Dakota in the winter, and that place gets cold. That's about as cold as anywhere in the world. And these missionaries show up, and every morning the mother, the Indian mothers would take their babies, young children, we're talking about under 3 years old, cut a hole in the ice and make the babies, you know, go in there and take a bath naked, okay, in the winter. And of course, the missionaries are like, why are you torturing your kids? What are you doing? And the women said, no, we're teaching them to be brave. That's what they said. And now we know, in addition to the mental rewiring, because for sure bravery is built over time. We know this. Entrepreneur Magazine had something about how success changes the amount of dopamine and testosterone receptors you have in the brain to receive the dopamine. So courage, reward for great, for risks and so on. They were rewiring their children's brain. And what we know now, in addition to that, it's like Kobe Bryant, you know, using cold to cut weight and keep his joints going. So I think
does Kobe Bryant use that? Does he use cold?
Yeah.
He's a cryo chambers. Does he do like cold showers or?
He does. He has a huge bathtub and he fills it completely with ice and then goes in there for like 30 minutes. Some crazy. Kobe Bryant is a fascinating man in terms of toughness. He shoots anywhere from 400 to 800 made shots before practice starts. Kobe Bryant, it's fascinating. There's a good video on YouTube. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It was like 9 things Kobe Bryant recommends. And he goes through all these things. I remember the only one I can totally remember right now is at the very end, he kind of left. They just got him impromptu and he came back and he said, oh yeah, stretch. I remember that. He's always huge. I go down these Laker game. These pro athlete guys can do the splits like a gymnast girl. Like a 280-pound, 6'8" guy is doing the split. So that's a whole nother thing, but they're using water. They're using cold more and more. Incredible amounts of cold is becoming. And so I tell people, you know, I got these people on my book. I'm like, take a cold shower every day. Start small, you know, because I do it more. You know, for me, came from a place of a lot of what I do is teaching people to become entrepreneurs and, you know, this. So it was like build courage. Successful people have massive levels of courage, but sports people are using, like I say, there's a fine line between the success of billionaires and the success of Ironmen. It's all about the same game. Getting in the top 1% is pretty, the principles are ubiquitous. They're common among all of them, all the categories. Mm.
Now, yeah, that was one thing that I found when I started doing cold thermogenesis was I would take a shower, like a whatever, a 1 minute or 90 second hot shower, and then just finish up with 10 seconds of cold or 15 seconds of cold.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
And then, you know, now I don't use the hot water part of my shower at all. And, you know, I thought it was pretty cool when I went over to your house in Hollywood, how you have basically a pool out on your front deck that's kept cold. And I've kind of noticed this theme. Like, I actually, after I went to your place, I was over at Mark Sisson's house, who's another kind of guru when it comes to getting the most out of your body. And he's got this cold pool off of his front porch, and now I'm working on a new house out in the middle of the forest, and I'm putting a cold pool outside my house just to kind of make it even easier. So, you know, you've talked about some of these books, and certainly for those of you listening in, again, at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Ty, I'm writing furiously as Ty is talking about each of these books that he mentions. And by the way, like I mentioned, Ty's mentored me a little bit, and pretty much any book he recommends, I buy and I read right away. So check them out. But you've talked about cold. You've talked about getting up early and trying to go to bed early at least once a month. And
I think it's going to bed. Let me add, I think going to bed early is more important than the wake up thing. I really think from my little experience there for a while, you know, the Amish couple, I mean, at the Amish, if you wake up at 5:30, you are like a late riser. So I went a solid almost 10 years on a farm waking up very early. And I think it's much more about what time you go to bed.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather go to bed at 7 and sleep, not wake up till 10 in the morning. Cause if you naturally sleep, your body's not stupid. It's probably saying I need that much sleep. So my main thing is go to bed earlier if you can.
Yeah. I love it. Now I definitely, before I let you go, I do want to know how in the heck you read all the books that you read. But before we get into that, because I know folks probably have this list of books you've already mentioned and they're thinking, how the heck can they actually get through all those? Can you give us one other tip that you found really helps for getting tough, for being resilient, for bouncing back, whether it be mentally or physically?
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I've compiled this thing. I don't know if I should talk about stuff on my website, but I got a free download on my site called 67 Steps to Greatness, right? So I've compiled what I've learned as an investor, what I've learned from being around some of the most amazing people in the world, mentor me and so on. And so I distilled 200 ideas down to 67. The idea was, you know, they say a habit takes about 66 days. So I added one more for good luck. So 67 is the number. And within that 67, you asked me for what's most relevant. I'll tell you what I think may be the most relevant. Charlie Munger, the great, they, you know, Bill Gates says he's the smartest man alive right now, wisest man. And I consume anything ever by Charlie Munger.
Oh, his almanac is amazing.
Yes. I just went to the Berkshire Hathaway.
Poor Charlie's almanac.
Poor Charlie's almanac. It's a big one, but if you can flip through it. One of the principles he says would not only change anyone listening to this group, but would change the world if we truly understood this. And it would definitely change your body. And he says, to get what you want, you have to deserve what you want. The world is not yet crazy enough of a place to reward a whole bunch of undeserving people. So here's the deal. You and I, for various reasons, I'm not going to get into political, societal, let's just call a spade a spade. We have been and become slowly but surely entitled. We believe that this should be ours just because of our want of it. As Jim Rohn says, the world doesn't respond to need, it responds to seed. I always say, if you're a farmer in October looking at the ground going, where's my corn? My question is, what were you doing in April? To get what you want, you have to deserve. And so I think even at the highest levels, you still see people needing to remove this ignorance. You have to dig deep within your brain and find the areas where you think you just deserve it for no other reason than you want it, and get rid of that sentiment. You have to go to get this. We live in a world of 7 billion people, Ben. It's becoming increasingly competitive, whether you are a professional athlete, whether you are a person who's trying to make money, whether you're a person trying to – whatever you're trying to stake your claim in the world. And so you got to go. Who deserves this more than me? And when the answer is nobody, then you're in the right state of mind. Now, like John Wooden says, God only made one Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, meaning, you know, 7'2", amazing athlete. Not all of us have that capacity. We're not in a competition with Michael Jordan. We're in a competition with our own capacity. But still, with that said, very few of us, my friend, I mean, myself included, even approach minimal amounts of our capacity. The capacity, you know, I read Hilton, a great book. It's called Hilton's Story or something. It's the biography of Conrad Hilton. And he built the, you know, huge empire, great grandfather of Paris Hilton, but he was the good version of the Hilton, right? He worked for it. And he said he stumbled upon this book by Helen Keller. I just bought it. And one line is, it said optimism. You know, he went through the depression when 90% of hotels failed. But you know what? He always made sure he deserved it. Michael Jordan, he knew at the end of the day, he was driven a little bit by fear. I mean, the amygdala part of your brain should not be ignored. It's almost the strongest. The only part stronger than the amygdala, fear part of your brain, that controls your fears and your neuroses and your anxiety, is maybe you can create fear annihilation memories in the prefrontal median cortex, so the front of your brain. But that's hard. But Jordan was driven through fear, not paralyzed by it, of someone else deserving it more than him. And that man didn't have an entitled bone in his body. And he arguably is the greatest athlete of all time, at least in professional sports. I mean, there's nothing Michael Jordan didn't accomplish in basketball, whether it was, you know, he was the fastest guy on the court. It's funny, I was reading in his biography, he was one day after he lost the NCAA championship, he said to the coach at UNC, hey, I don't want to do this. I need a break from basketball. And the coach was like, okay. And then the next morning he walked in the gym in the summer and there was Michael Jordan playing again. And he said, why? And he said, because I got to get better, coach. Someone else thought it was getting better. See, he knew the deserve it factor. To get what you want, you got to deserve it. We're all entitled.
That's why one of the biggest tips I give to people for their children, and one of the things that I do with my kids, is I never, ever praise the ability. I always praise the effort. So they always know that it's not about them being entitled to something because they're smart or because they're better looking or because maybe someday they're taller. It's all about the amount of work that they put in. And I think that that's very, very important for people to know. When you open up your eyes in the morning, that what you accomplish that day, whether it be what you accomplish physically, what you accomplish from a recovery standpoint, what you accomplish from a money-making standpoint, none of it has anything to do with your with what you may be entitled to. Sure, there's some natural and genetic talent involved, but ultimately it just comes down to the amount of work that you put in. And I think that's, you know, it can – you got to be careful with it because you don't want to overtrain your body. And you, like I mentioned, you know, recovery is just as important as training. You know, that's what I talk about in my book. But it's such an important message. And
Joel Salatin said, Ty, nature laughs last. I remember that as a young 18-year-old kid. So when it comes to, you know, this factor of deserve it, part of that is respecting nature. And part of nature's thing, we come from hunter-gatherers, you better be resting a lot, because if you think nature doesn't apply to you, you're not only violating one of the rules, 67 rules I have, which is nature laughs last, but number two, it makes you deserve it less. Yep. You know, you deserve it less. You must. You know, we got to wrap up. I want to read you this cool thing because we're talking about this time frame thing. Most people are impatient, and Charlie Munger's grandfather said to him, real opportunities that come to you are few. It's a few, very fortunate life that is just bathed in opportunity all the way. Most people just get a few times when they can make a huge difference by seizing a huge activity. And he said, when you find one of those huge opportunities and you can clearly recognize it, see it boldly and don't do it small. He's saying that you must be patient. Life is about patience as well, because that is part of nature. The natural, if you look at nature's cycle, whether it's investment, it only grows at about 3 to 6%. Whether it's muscle, whether it's weight loss, It needs to be gradual. So you got to want to deserve it, but you got to be willing to follow that natural pattern, or else you're basically saying, I'm smarter than the universe, and you lose in that one anytime. It should be the teacher of last resort. Nature is not a great teacher. Yeah. It's a mean teacher.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. Now, Ty, I've got one final question for you. You have a pretty cool system for reading books and for making yourself better with reading books, and also for getting through a lot of books. What is your system for reading books?
Well, first thing, it just follows what we just talked about. One, change of mindset. Drucker talks about disabling ignorance. Most people say it's impossible to read a lot. That's disabling ignorance because you never tried it. You have no idea. So I have this mentor academy, and I have people all over the world in this private mentorship that I have. But I also occasionally, people live in LA and I mentor them in person. So I'm mentoring this guy, James Swanick. He's got a top podcast too, and he's a friend.
I actually know James.
And so now James, it's insane. He reads a book a day. And I was talking to him and I was like, you know, what do you think? How hard is it? He's like, man, I think I could do three a day. He goes, all it is laying on the couch. And again, slowly but surely, you get ahead. And he's been working with me for almost a year. And so he wasn't that good at it a long time ago, but you make haste slowly, you jump into it. And the next thing you know, your brain rewires itself to be able to read books quickly. Now, with books, I'll say this. I know I've quoted Charlie Munger a lot. I always pick one guy that I'm focused on right now. You know, Munger says, spend each day trying to be a little wiser than you were when you woke up. So he says, step by step, you get ahead, but not necessarily in fast spurts. But you build discipline by preparing for fast spurts. Slug it out one inch at a time, day by day. At the end of the day, if you live long enough, most people get what they deserve. So when it comes to this book thing, it's another goal. Because really what this whole podcast, I know what it's about. I mean, you told me it's about how to get big things, hard accomplishments done. And so books is kind of like reading a book a day is kind of like being a triathlete of the brain. Everybody here can do it. So what you do is you train slow. Get to at least a book a week. Once you're at a book a week, you'll be able to move to a book every 3 days. And then you'll move to a book a day. It won't be that hard. Now, I'll give you a few little pointers here. Because the first one is, do not feel you have to read a whole book. Be a gold miner. Get one nugget out of it. Move on. Number two, read much less volume of books in terms of total. There's 130 million books published. There's only about 10,000 worth reading. So even for that, most people, 10,000, find the 500 most important books and just read them over and over for the rest of your life. So when you read, you know, on day one, when you read a book like, let's say, I think Freud wrote a book called Civilization and Its Discontents. I think it's one of the greatest books of all time. Everyone should read it. But you can just read one chapter, put it down, see books as your friend, close the book, put it on the shelf, and reread it in 6 months. So don't get attached that you have to. Do it kind of like, you know, running a triathlete. You don't always run a full marathon, I'm not a triathlete, but you don't run a full marathon every time you start out doing a mile. Do the same thing with books. Don't feel that you need to read the whole thing. Very picky in the books that you read. You tell me who you'd rather invest time, money, and energy. Somebody who read 100 of the greatest books over and over for the last 20 years and has memorized the 100 greatest thinkers in different areas, or some dude who reads every pop culture book that comes out, or some guy. So be the person. I actually have on my website, I just published a free little thing. You can see what I consider. Of course, it's subjective. You'll have a different list, but I'm publishing. And I constantly change it, what I think are the 1,000 most important books, numbered from number one to number 1,000. And I have them all a mixture from health, wealth, love, social, happiness. I've got things on, you know, diet, Omnivore's Dilemma, all these kind of things. But I also have old school books, Plato or whatever. So I've got, that's a good place. So be picky. Don't feel you need to read everything. Start slowly but surely. And then lastly, get a small group. Robin Dunbar is a famous anthropologist. He said the human mind is finely attuned to this thing he called Dunbar's number, about 150 acquaintances and friends. That's what he said your ideal social life. Do the same thing with books. Find 150 books that will become your friends. until the day that you die. They will make you wiser. They will remove ignorance, and they will get you ahead step by step, and they'll increase your deserve it faster. And the deserve it factor. One last thing relevant to toughness. This is the schedule that I like. In the morning, when you wake up, read a very short amount over breakfast. A classic book. It needs to be over 50 years old. It stood the test of time. It's like soap of the brain. It's literally like a soap of the brain because we get bombarded by over 2,000 dumb advertisements. Use that to clear the brain. During the day.
Classic book like.
A classic. It could be anything from Plato to How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Okay,
just something that's like really stood, not anything new. Okay. I like them over 1950. Back to thousands of years. Read a little Plato. It's fascinating, these guys. Then just, it can be small, 5 minutes. Just a little bit of soap goes a long way. Then when you take your nap, and I know you recommend a nap, the best way I find a nap for me, I lay in bed, I find a book that's a how-to book relevant to my career. And I set my timer. For me, I set to 35 minutes. I find works well. I'm not groggy. I read that book and it naturally makes me a little sleepy, 20 minutes. And I literally always fall asleep with the book falling out of my hand. And then I sleep for like 15 and I wake up refreshed. But this is the last one. So that's the how-to book is in the middle of the day during your nap.
Got it.
It helps you go to sleep. The third one is the most important for your audience. At night, read biographies. Mm. Don't read how-to books because it'll get your mind racing. Yeah. I mean, read Kon-Tiki. You want to read about tough guys, read about Thor Heyerdahl and Kon-Tiki, a little book. It will blow your mind, the levels of courage. And these guys floated a raft 6 inches above water, and they floated across from Chile, South America, to the South Pacific Islands. That takes – you talk about tough. Across on a raft.
That's the book that's called Across the Pacific in a Raft?
It's called – the one I read is literally called Kon-Tiki, K-O-N-T-I-K-I. Okay. So what happens is – courage and toughness rubs off on you. And that nighttime, there's nothing more inspiring than reading, whether it's Geronimo, Michael Jordan, Total Recall by Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Kon-Tiki. Man, stories of courage will increase your toughness almost as fast as – but you must do it by it rubbing off on you. Humans don't learn audio. They don't learn visual. They don't learn kinesthetic. They learn – when I was on that farm, I saw a mother cow, how she teaches a baby cow. She doesn't talk. She doesn't use a chalkboard. She doesn't even demonstrate and say, hey, let me help you hammer this like a construction thing. Over time, that baby cow just learns by the mom's cow actions rubbing off. Yeah. And that's what happens, whether it's in business or toughness. And let me add, and I don't know if we're running out of time, mentors, man, change who you are around. And books are the simplest way to start, but books – I call this – I talk about my TED Talk, Law of 33%. Spend 33% of your time around people below you. Those are people you can mentor, and those are people who make you feel good about yourself because you realize somebody's doing worse than you, right? Yeah. Then you need 33% of people on your level. Mahatma Gandhi, I read his autobiography, very courageous, tough man. And he says, on your rise to the top, it will get lonely. And your best allies will be people on your level. They will befriend you. Those are your friends. But the last part's the hardest. Spend 33% of your time around people who make you uncomfortable. They're so far ahead of you. When I was back with Joel Salatin, I went on this trip with these group of billionaire guys that were like 60. And I remember they got a little drunk. We were around a fireplace. They were talking. They started asking me questions about money and finance. And I didn't know the answer. They're like, what's the IRR on your business, Ty? I was like, I don't know what IRR are. And I remember one of them said to me, they were nice when they were sober. When a drunk guy's like, you're never going to make any money being stupid like that. And I remember being like, no, I was like, I took the Michael Jordan approach, thank God. I was like, no one will ever be able to laugh at me like that. And I was able then, through the pain of being around people way ahead of me. Now, sometimes people way ahead of you will be nice, and sometimes they won't. But if you can get that last 33%, you can get 3 hours a day around people 20 years ahead of you, wherever you want to be, whether it's millionaire or being able to, you know, be like Geronimo and run across the desert with water in your mouth and spit it all out. It's the same thing. Change who you're around. And that's very hard, but you can do it. Yep. It's easier. And books are the only reason I like books is because it's the only way I can get around Mahatma Gandhi. He died, right? Kon-Tiki, he died. So start there, but don't end there. Get around people in person as well. And make sure you feel uncomfortable because, you know, the oldest of all sayings in health is no pain, no gain. And there's definitely some truth to that. Get a six pack, not only of your stomach, but a six pack of the mind. The world needs people with both.
Same goes for fitness too. Hang around people who make you uncomfortable, do events, do workouts, people who are able to push a little bit harder than you can. And I think that that makes a huge difference as well. Man, we could talk forever, but we've gone an hour and there are a ton of resources for folks. So if you're listening, a few quick things. First of all, I've listed six books in the show notes: Geronimo, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Total Recall, Michael Jordan, The Life, Peter Drucker, Managing Life, Poor Charlie's Almanac, and the book Contiki. They're all over there in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/tie. My challenge to you is over the next 30 days, go and read those books. And I'm even going to make this a little bit sweeter for you. If you're listening in and you take a picture of yourself with all six of those books, I'm going to trust you and we're going to have a trust relationship here that you've actually read them. If you take a picture and you send it in to me or you post it at facebook.com/BGFitness holding each of those books, I'll sign a copy of my book and I'll send it to you. If you already own my book, that's fine. Just give it to one of your friends. But that's my 30-day challenge.
Can I sweeten that deal for people and make it better for them and worse for you?
Let's do it.
Here's the thing. Just read some of the best parts of those books.
Got it. Read the best parts.
Now, I'm not trying to make it too easy. I'm not talking about read the table of contents and then go, oh, I read the six table of contents. But I'm saying, let's get people in this habit. The Michael Jordan book's a big book. Let's just get in there. If you even read, six books, let's say if they read a certain amount of pages, because I want people to get in that habit of not feeling that every word, your brain can't take in every word.
And just the simple fact, if you're like me, the simple fact of owning all six of those books and having them around, for me, I've got a book in my bathroom, book on my my bedstand, book in my office. And so I always have those books sitting there, and it's always a rotation of books each week. But I know if they're there, I got to read them because they're top of mind. So, I agree.
Make them your friends. Make mentors your friends, living and alive.
I will put links to all those books. I'm going to put a link to Ty's Book of the Day list. I'm going to put a link to Joel Salatin, if you don't know about him and the amazing books he's written. Go check that out. Finally, just a couple of other things. Head over to iTunes and do two things. First of all, if you haven't yet subscribed to or left a review for the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast, please do so. And while you are over there, here's a nice little surprise for you. Ty also has a new podcast. It's called The Grand Theory of Everything. Ty and I did a 90-minute show together. I got the title of that one right, Ty. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The Grand Theory of Everything. Go check out Ty's show too. Subscribe to it. Take a listen. Leave him a review. He just started his podcast and it's really amazing. Like I mentioned, Ty has mentored me, and just the fact of you listening to his podcast, you're going to get a lot of the same tips that you would get if Ty was mentoring you as well, except you just basically get them for free on iTunes. So check that out, The Grand Theory of Everything on iTunes. And
If they go to on tylopez.com, I've got links to everything.
Yeah.
Check out my Instagram. But also go in that Book of the Day. I got 1.5 million people in 40 countries. It's completely free. It's just tailopez.com. There's a place to join. I'm big on Twitter. I got almost 170,000 people. I like to tweet things there. And they can download that 67-step thing. That's pretty cool. It's not a hokey, dopey thing. It's actually well thought out, things you haven't heard in other places. So I got that 60. I also have a podcast on that too, and my YouTube channel, I put some stuff. So
yeah,
but tylopez.com is a good central place where they can get everything. Sweet.
All right, folks, so check it all out. Check out tylopez.com, bengreenfieldfitness.com/ty. Thank you so much for listening. I promise another amazing special guest next week. Ty, thanks so much for coming on the call, man.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I really appreciate it.
All right, folks. This is Ben Greenfield and Ty Lopez signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Have an amazing week.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.